morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. We're glad you could join us for a fun-filled afternoon of ethics, given by our one and only city attorney, Bill Reichman. If you have not received two pamphlets, they're up here. Let me know, and I can bring them over to you. City staff has it in their iPads. And there's a sign-up sheet going around. Please print your name and let me have your email address. We will be sending you a certificate of completion so that you can use it for whatever you may need it for. And without further ado, Bill Reichman.
Yay! Thanks for the support. Good afternoon. Or as my favorite city manager likes to say, good morning. Couple observations. First of all, I always love it when you come to a talk like this. The first thing that fills up is the backlog. And I got to tell you that when I go to a seminar, I'm the one that's always in the back row first, too. So I can't be too critical. I was going to take it personally.
Right.
It's always fun to give a talk to folks that have to come and listen to you, but really would rather be anywhere else.
No, it's not
right.
True.
From anybody. So I appreciate you joining us today, and I want to thank the City Council, City of Palm Coast, because when we brought this responsibility to their attention, the City Council thought that it would be efficient and helpful to open up this conversation that we're going to have today, as well as the conversation we're going to have 2 weeks from today, to folks that could equally benefit from this, what I hope will be today, and I mean this very sincerely, not my children would disagree, but I really don't like the lecture. I would prefer to have a conversation. I think that this will go a lot better. So I would respectfully request that all of you, because this is important to all of you, as you will soon find out, please ask questions, give me some examples. I'll do my best to answer them. Today we're going to be talking about ethics. As all of you know.
In light of some recent activities in this area, Virginia has a little announcement she'd like to make.
This meeting is being streamed live, so the public is hearing it as well, so it is being recorded.
Very good. I asked for conversations, I'm getting them.
Well, how about your qualifications as a lecturer?
Fair enough. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I have been practicing since 1983 and have been the city attorney for this city for 8 years, since 2008, and have been a head city attorney for another city since 1999, and have been representing cities in my capacity as assistant city attorney before that, for about 15 years before that. So I guess that gives you an idea that I earned this bald spot in these gray hairs, honestly. I have been a lecturer for several community colleges in the areas of civil litigation and pretrial litigation, and was a finalist for City Attorney of the Year several years ago, for whatever that's worth. Enjoy representing governments, and I mean this sincerely very much, because I have done a lot of other things. I've done family law, and I've done condemnation, and I've done commercial litigation, and I can tell you that I never want to have to do another divorce again. So please let me continue to do this. You were given, and as everyone will attest to, when it comes to technology, I am a dinosaur. So I gave you a handout, and it's something that instead of that you can look up there, you're going to have to look at your handout or stare at us. But I think it's helpful because this way you can take this with you. Also, there is an exhibit, which is the law that really pertains to what we're talking about today. So let's start there so that you can, I'd like to try to give you like a working knowledge of how to use this information, the paperwork that I'm giving you today. Do you don't mind if I take the jacket off? Just get my hot hand. I'm going to say it again. If there's at any point we're talking today, you all have a question. I really, really want you to stop me and and we can talk about it, because this is something that only works if this helps all of you. Okay. This starts with the exhibit. I want to start with the exhibit, because that's the law. And you can see that the top item is the statute that the legislature, in its infinite wisdom, as I keep using that term, decided it was something that we had to do as local officials. And starting January 1st, the first of this month, all of you, and let me stop. If you're an elected official, will you please raise your hand? Okay. How many of you have been to EMO before? How many of you have had a lecture on ethics at EMO or somewhere else before? Okay.
Or somewhere else?
Right. Well, I mean, EMO is usually where you receive it, but I mean, there's obviously other resources. Yes, sir.
Some county officials.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was going to say. There's some county officials, so they have the FAC or whatever.
Okay, so we've got, just so I know, we've got some county officials. Thank you. What other cities are represented here today?
Beverly Beach.
Greenland. Is that everybody? That's it, right? We got someone from everywhere for Collier County. All right. As all of you are probably aware by now, the state legislature is mandating that once a year, you're going to have to go, and you're going to have to certify it under Form 1 that you submit to the state to tell them how you're going to retire early because you're so rich. You have to attach a certification. You're going to put it in there that you've taken 2 hours on ethics, which is what we're going to do today, and then you have 2 hours, an hour each on public records, and we're going to do that next two Tuesdays from now, and then another hour on Sunshine, Government Sunshine, which is both of those are statutory as well. All of this imposed upon us by Tallahassee. So you'll see on the first page of the handout, that's the law that brings us all here together today. The next document is from the Florida Constitution. And I wanted to read something from that. That's Article 2, Section 8. I'm going to get general before we get specific. Article 2, Section 8 of the Florida Constitution says that a public office is a public trust, and then the next sentence says people shall have the right to be secure and sustain that trust against abuse. That's really what precipitated the legislature and what I've read in passing this law. And, of course, the very next page you'll see is a reference to what the legislature State of Florida did to specifically implement the obligation, which is the Florida Administrative Code says Florida Commission on Ethics Rule. So let's be very clear. If some of you do some things that you're not supposed to do, this is the letter that you're going to get in the mail that you don't want to see and you don't want to open. And that's going to be from the Florida Commission on Ethics. And if you look at that document in your handout, you'll see that they passed a rule 34.7025 and subsection B. Talks about the stuff I just mentioned, and also says that providers, that's me, City of Palm Coast, have to cover these 11 things. We can talk about more things, but these are the 11 things we have to talk about for the purpose of government sunshine and for ethics, including government sunshine and public records. And if you'll see in my handout, just so that if anyone asks you, just going through this, so if anyone asks you, you can say, look at the table of contents. It is covers all the same things that are in that requirement in the Florida Commission on Ethics Rule. Now, the last thing that I gave to you, and if you go through and you can read all that, God bless you. That's in chapter 112. And, I'm going to be real blunt with you all because I've read it a bunch of times. How many people have read this? How many people have actually read Chapter 112, Part 3, Code of Ethics? Okay, three people. Well, I'll tell you, that's incredible, because if you read through this, let me ask the next question. How many people understood when they got done what the rules meant? And I'm asking you that sincerely, because I've read it a bunch of times. I've been to seminars about it, and I still struggle with it. And I don't think I'm the only one.
because the Commission on Ethics has submitted thousands of opinions trying to interpret, thousands of opinions trying to interpret what this, what these, come on, this handouts, there's two pages. There's one which is the statute. There's one page or two pages which is the Constitution. The rest of it is 112. That's all the things that you all have to do, and if you don't, you're going to get in trouble. I'm going to ask you to write down one thing, and it's because I'm going to be reading from it a little bit and referring to it. It's an article that came out. It was in the Quality Cities. How many of y'all get that magazine, Quality Cities? I guess if you're from the county, you don't get that. But I would recommend it. It's the March and April publication from 2011, so it's about 4 years ago. And there was an article in there. It's called Ethical Behavior in Office. Know the Law and Trust Your Conscience. And I'm gonna read some things from there before we get into the outline for the specifics. Because I really think there's some things for you to keep in mind. It says that the ethics law in the state of Florida is based on three principles. A public office is a public trust. That's the Florida Constitution. A situation that tempts to dishonor. That's what precipitates the problems. And three, no man can serve two masters. Those are the things that I would ask you to keep in mind, that whenever the hair on the back of your neck is standing up, whenever something tells you, wait a minute, you know, the things that it's violating a rule that your mom or your dad, when you were in elementary school, said, boy, I don't think that's right. Those are the things when you want to, if you really have a lot of time, pull this out or go to the outline, or better yet, all of you have your own attorneys. And I don't mean your personal attorneys, but I mean your city attorneys and your county attorneys. And I'm not about to try to, today, I'm just telling you, I'm not about to try to give you every last little detail of what you can and what you can't do in 112. I'm not going to sit here and try to give you all the opinions from the Commission on Ethics. And there's case law as well. It's just impossible. What I was hoping to do today is give you a broad brush approach of what issues you need to be thinking about as you do your jobs, and what resources that you have available to you when that hair on the back of your neck stands up because it doesn't seem right. So let's talk about those resources. Because the first resource I would suggest you go to is to your attorney, either your city attorney or to your county attorney. Because this is something that they've been trained to do. And I'm sure, how many of you have already talked to your attorneys, your governmental attorneys, about ethical issues? I hope everyone should raise their hand. Someone give me an idea of the questions that you asked, because I think I know what they're going to be. What were the questions that you asked?
Whether or not you...
About ethics. About ethics. Not about red light cameras. I'm not going to talk about red light cameras, okay? It's not going to happen.
About what kind of conversations you can have with your colleagues.
Sunshine issues, okay? What about ethics? I mean, if you violate that, then it's a problem. It's an ethics. But about ethics, give me some examples before we even get into to break down the specifics. What are some of the things that you all have been worrying about? Yes, sir.
We had an incident recently where we had some meetings, very touchy meetings, involving one of our business owners in our town. And I think this comes under the area of ethics, but my concern was how far could I go with this gentleman to control him in the meeting.
Okay. That's not really an ethical issue. That's more of a question of due process and the rights to speak, which is really another topic. If you were doing business with that person and that person was coming before you asking for something, and we'll talk about that in a second, that would be an ethical issue. Someone else has their hand up. Yes, ma'am.
Doing business with somebody in the community.
Right. And we're going to talk about it, but I'm going to try to address these things, because the most common the most common type of, and so I'm going to prime the pump a little bit, the most common type of concerns that all of you are going to have with ethical issues are going to be, you have to vote on something, and you're worried about whether you have an interest, you have a dog in the hunt, and it's called a voting conflict of interest. That's real common. As far as my experience as a city attorney, that's the most common question that I receive from my clients, my city officials, elected officials, is do I have to abstain and follow the process under Chapter 112 because I have some special interest in this matter that's coming before my agency, my board, my council, or my commission. And that is something that if all of you have not already had that concern, by the time you finish your term or terms, you're probably going to have that concern. And it's a legitimate worry. And the other most common one is about gifts. A lot of people come to me and say, someone said that I could go out to their, spend a weekend at their ranch, or you know, I've got these. Someone said they'd love to go to dinner with me, and they'll treat. I've got these tickets that I really would like to use. And you know, what can I do? What are the rules? You know, and there's these amounts that I have to report, and how do I do that? And does it depend upon who's trying to give me this gift? And I always, and I'm going to read something from this, but you know, the general rule is why there's laws about not taking gifts. And we'll get into more details, just because it deteriorates and it impacts the public's trust in the neutrality and the fairness of the elected officials. And I would ask all of you, why is that person who you've probably never, you know, go on a holiday with, or you've never gone to church with, or your kids don't play soccer together, why is that person all of a sudden wanting to give you a gift? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm an attorney, I've been doing it for 33 years, and therefore by definition, I'm cynical. But my guess is that person is giving you a gift because it's sooner or later, and probably sooner, they're going to ask you for something. And it's not because you live at 75 Lansdowne in the city of Palm Coast. It's because you're a city or a governmental official. That's why you're getting the gift, and that's why these laws apply. So my advice that I always give, again, I'm just trying to give the most common types of concerns, is don't take it. Say thank you very much. If it's something that you feel that you need to give, you can give it to my government. You can give it to the city. I can be the temporary receiver of this, and then I will promptly turn it over to the local government of which I am a public official. Of course, this does not apply to your family or relatives. You can continue to exchange Christmas presents or whatever it is that you need to do. And this is common sense, folks. If you've got a developer that's coming in front of you, or if you've got the head of a homeowners association, and all of a sudden they want to take you out to a big steak dinner, you just want to say thank you very much. I look forward to making a nice, fair decision on anything that comes before you. But at this point, it would hurt you. This is what I always suggest to my clients. Tell them that it would affect you and hurt you more than it'll hurt me. And all of you know that because of government ascension, because of public records, everybody in this room is on the radar. That's the term that I use. Everybody in this room is on the radar. And Palm Coast is a big place. It's bigger than Bunnell. It's bigger than Marineland. But it's still, people know what's going on. They watch you when you're out at restaurants, and they watch you, you know, when you're walking around, and when they see you out at church or at a social club. They know who you're with, and they know who you're talking to. And Virginia, I would say 30% of her job is public records requests, which we're going to talk about in 2 weeks. I've got news for you. People that make public records requests, they're not just doing it for their general education. Generally speaking, they want to know something, and it's pointed. We're members of the press. Or raise your hand if you're in the press. Right?
Right. Higher.
Yeah. For the elected and officials in the room, I want you, if you're in the press, raise your hand real high. Yeah, okay. There's one brave soul. Okay, but you know what I'm saying, folks. I mean, so don't think that anything that you say, you do, or you give, or you take, is you have to, let me rephrase it. Anything that I put in writing or that I receive from a client, I look at it this way. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but it kind of fits in there because we're going to talk about it in 2 weeks. For purposes of public records, for purposes of being on the radar screen, if I send an email, if I send a tweet, which I don't know how to do, if I send, you know, a message or something like that, what I think about is, how is that going to look on the front page of the local newspaper tomorrow morning? That's what I think about. And if I don't like the thought of seeing that on the front page of the local newspaper, I don't send it in writing because it's a public record. Well, the point is that the same thing goes with ethics. You just have to be aware that no matter what you're doing, someone's watching.
May I ask you a question?
Please.
The local hospital has an annual dinner, and they routinely invite elected officials as their guests.
That's a gift, and you have to report it. We're going to get into the specifics. And I'm foreshadowing, but thank you. Because a lot of it depends upon, and this is the key, as long as we're there, I want to make sure everyone's real clear. How many in your cities have a registration program for lobbyists? Okay, a lot of cities do that. And the reason is because under the gift law, Chapter 112, you're not allowed to receive gifts from lobbyists that are over $100, period. You can't take them. Otherwise, you have committed an ethical violation. Now, you can receive gifts more than $100 from non-lobbyists, but you know, you look in the law about what is and what is not a lobbyist, and I dare you sometimes to make that differentiation between one who is and one who is not. You have to report. There's reporting requirements based upon whether the gift is from a lobbyist or not, whether it's more than $100, whether it's less than $25, but less than $100. You have to determine the value. How is it valued? Was it at one sitting or more than one sitting? There's all of these factors. Now, if y'all are good enough to be able to cruise your way through all of those little details about receiving gifts and know when you're receiving them and report them correctly, quarterly and annually, God bless you. But you better keep close track of it, and you better keep your receipts. Because, I mean, there's elections and there's people that like to run against you, and those are just the kind of things that they love to report, rightly or wrongly, fairly or unfairly, to the Commission on Ethics, so that it makes the newspaper for purposes of the results that you know what I'm talking about. So you've got to be really careful with gifts. So yes, you can receive it, and it happens all the time. Boy Scouts, you know, civic groups, a hospital. But you just got to know how much it is, and then you've got to report it. And you can work with your city clerks, your county clerks should have the forms that we're going to talk about in a little bit, and will help you. Virginia, you have all the forms, and have you helped some of our city council members fill them out for purposes of gift receipt?
We haven't had any that have received gifts.
See, my folks are so good. My folks are so good that they know that. Okay. Yes, sir.
Another question. Every year, many of us, most of us, go to the Florida League of Cities Conference.
Right.
And at that conference, one or more vendors host very elaborate events that are open to attendees. For the city people, Waste Management has a Death by Chocolate Night, open bar, and all the desserts you could ever want.
Right.
Very difficult to put a price on it.
Right.
Other companies, a conglomerate of engineering firms host a dinner whose value has got to be in excess of $100. Open, you can attend if you like. What's the appropriate procedure? Well, because I see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of elected officials.
Right, absolutely.
Taking
oh, advantage. Absolutely. You're not alone, are you? Everyone else is in there. Who doesn't like chocolate, right?
Well, I'll give you the typical lawyer answer, but remember now, I'm just the messenger. I didn't write the rules, okay? This is in Tallahassee that wrote the rules. First thing you'd want to do is you'd have to hope that, because all these people that you just mentioned are either lobbyists in general or possibly lobbyists for your local government, in which case they have a duty to report as well. They have a duty to report all contributions. They're called the donors, or the donee, as far as that's the term of art for gifts. You can contact them, and they should have, if they've done it right, and they've got a good lawyer who has told them what the rules apply, because see, they can get in trouble as well. There are criminal statutes that apply to lobbyists as well, as far as what they can give. But what they should do is they should have broken down what the per diem is for each person, and it should be less than $100. It may seem like it's more than $100, but if they've done their job right, it would be less than $100. For the other ones, I'm trying to respond to your specific mm-hmm. question. You know, the death by chocolate or anything. That's going to be a smaller amount. And what they can do is you can contact them, or you can ask the people that put on these conferences should have the information. They should, if they're doing it right, they should have the breakdown in advance to be able to provide to the elected officials. I don't know if they do or not. They should. Let's say that they have 1,000 people there, and the total amount was, you know, $10,000. Well, then you can do the math, and you can figure out. Remember, if it's less than $25, then you don't have to report it. If it's between $25 and $100, then you've got to fill it out on your quarterly return. Again, the city clerk can provide that. I would say again, voting conflicts and gifts are the ones that are going to trip you up the most. And you have to be probably aware of those as much as anything else. Any other questions so far? Okay. I did mention to you this article. These are some, just a follow-up on that. This is what this gentleman said about gifts. He said, if you think about these things at all the time, it's really going to help you. If you think it might be wrong, it is. 2, don't get yourself into a situation that tempts to dishonor. If there's anyone who gives you something who doesn't want or expect something in return, I'm sorry, there's a question mark. Is there anyone who gives you something who doesn't want or expect something in return other than your mother? That's what he said. And then he said, and you can't be sure about her. That's not my humor, that's his, but I agree with him. Next, people don't give elected officials or government employees gifts because they like them, but because they want something. At best, it's a sense of obligation. And lastly, can you accept a gift that does not influence you? So those are some of the factors that I would suggest to you that you want to keep in mind. In my outline, this is the table of contents, and then there's this law that I've given the applicable law, so all of you have it. The very next is from another Quality Cities, sorry, county folks, I keep referencing that, but just 2 years ago, March and April, there was a comment about, it was an observation about something that I mentioned earlier about trying to deal with Chapter 112. It says the sheer number of laws and their complexity virtually guarantees that elected officials will make honest mistakes. My guess is that everyone in this room probably, I don't want to say this, the press is in the room, but the chances are that every elected official will make an honest mistake. But the treatment of the law and by the new media will really characterize the infractions as benign. Public officials investigated even minor technical violations find themselves mired in the process of defending themselves. They can spend extraordinary amounts of time and money, and in the end find that although they've been exonerated, their reputations have been sullied by the mere suggestion of wrongdoing, and political opponents are bouncing to make the most of it. So I'm not the only one that's cynical, I guess. I guess there's someone else that authored that quote in Quality Cities 2 years ago that would agree with me. So penalties. Let's go ahead and get that out of the way.
you would turn in your outline, should be in there. All right. I want to tell you what the penalties are. The law was recently, chapter 112 was recently changed so that as far as the chapter 112 consequences of violating, they're not criminal. Big sigh, really.
About 6 pages from the back.
Is it? Thank you. I thought I had this number in my... What is it under?
Maybe I'm not right. Lobbying before the executive branch was the page
before.
Before, but it's a list of fines.
Well, okay. And look, I'm just telling you this so that hopefully I can scare you. That's all. The more important thing is before we get done today, you have some...
That's compensation.
You'll have some better ideas. It's in the article for that I mentioned to you, and I wanted to go through it because there's non-criminal, there's also criminal penalties. So I just want you to know this is, this is probably worse than violation of public records or government sunshine if you do it wrong. The section is 112.317. Here's what can happen to you that's non-criminal. If you violate this, and obviously it depends on how bad it is, how bad you messed up. You can get impeached. Governor does that. Removal from office. Governor does that. Suspension from office unless your charter provides for these penalties. The governor does that. Public censure and reprimand, and that your city commission or your county commission, they can do that to you if they want. Forfeiture of salaries, civil penalties, and restitution. That's if your violation is where you've used your public office to take money that's public money or private money, and they can force you to give it back. Remember, I mentioned criminal. I wanted to at least give you this and. There are two statutes in the Florida statutes that could potentially apply to types of unethical conduct. Remember, there's what I just mentioned, which is where you read it in the newspaper and it affects your public office, but you're not going to have to worry about hiring an attorney to defend you in the criminal court, although you can hire an attorney to go before the Commission on Ethics. We'll talk about that. Usually, I know I'm jumping around, but I always try to say it when it's relevant. If you ever get a Commission on Ethics charge, most times, your local government will have the city attorney or hire special counsel to defend you. And most times, let me rephrase that. Every time that you're vindicated, the general rule is that the local government's attorney should be provided to you at no cost as a public official. The opposite is true. And you've probably read articles about that if you're defended, worst case scenario, you do something wrong, or you've got a bunch of really aggressive opponents, or whatever, someone files a Commission on Ethics charge, and the local government provides you an attorney. I've seen articles about this, and then the charges are substantiated, and then you've got the city council or the county commissioner or whatever asking for a repayment of the public funds from you as an elected official because you did take that $10,000 bribe, or you did go on the trip to the Caribbean from the garbage hauler. That's sort of obviously crazy set of facts. But there are two statutes that can overlap with criminal, and that's chapter 838, and that deals with bribery. Quid pro quo. It's just another way to describe one of the ethical violations. Unlawful compensation, official misconduct. Let's say you falsify or conceal public records. Let's say you obstruct information about a felony. Misuse of confidential information. That's something that's an ethical violation as well. We're going to talk about that. Big tampering. Then chapter 839, which is a little bit different, but addresses similar ethical violations, would be misuse of confidential information, withholding official records, falsifying records, those types of things. So only reason I mention this is I just want you to know that if someone's out to get you, and you're not minding your P's and Q's, there's ways that your life can get really difficult. So let's get to it now. Public ethics summary. This is just an overview. Number one, this is on the beginning of my outline. And I specifically gave you the phone numbers and the mailing address for the Commission on Ethics. And they have a hotline. You have the right as a public official, as long as it's not a hypothetical question, but it's a real question or concern, you're one of the groups of people that have standing to ask for an opinion. And the Commission on Ethics has two jobs, and we'll jump in ahead, but if you look at one of the last pages of my outline, the Commission on Ethics, and hopefully you're not ever going to have to get to know anybody there, but if you do, they're going to tell you that they've got two jobs. One is to give opinions to a limited group of people, and the other is to respond to complaints and to investigate complaints. You're one of the groups of people that has the right to ask questions. Not a what-if question, but if you're facing an issue. Again, you call your attorney and he or she says, I've looked in the manual from the Commission on Ethics and researched it, and this is a unique set of facts. Or it's a question of nepotism or a question of doing business with your own agency, which is much more complicated. And so let's make a phone call to the ethics hotline. And I do it a lot. And I would suggest that you can do it, or you can do it with your attorney.
Is their opinion binding?
Yes, it is. That's interesting. It's a good question. But it is binding.
But they will issue you a non-binding opinion.
They can. That's very true. It's very true. Thank you. But if you ask for a formal opinion, unlike an attorney general's opinion, I guess that's the best way to distinguish it. An attorney general's opinion is not binding on a court. It's advisory, but it's not binding. Whereas a commission on ethics opinion can be appealed to a court, but it is final, it's binding. But your point is well taken. You can ask for an informal opinion, and our office has done that for some of our other...
You get this faster.
Right. Right, and sometimes that's more helpful than just calling on the hotline too, because you can call on the hotline and they give you an answer, but then what if you get in that situation and you get in the hot seat and someone accuses you and you say, well, I talked to the Ethics Commission, and you've got a name and you've got a date and everything, but if you've got an informal written opinion, that's really helpful.
Well, I'm in it in advance of a vote. An issue's coming up and you're concerned that you may have a conflict, and if you outline the condition for them, they'll give you an idea whether you should vote or not.
Has anybody in the room had that situation and wished that they had an outlet to deal with that concern about it? Because I think this is, as much as anything today, there's two things I want to try to have you achieve. One is get a good feel for what the general rules are for issue spotting, to know when you're about to step in it. And number two, which we're talking about right now, is to know what resources are available to all of you, because I would respectfully suggest that if you have the intellectual capability and the knowledge to read through 112 and understand it, to be able to feel comfortable that you're making the right decisions on complicated sets of facts, good for you. But I would respectfully suggest that you are going to want to talk to your attorney, and you are going to want to call the Commission on Ethics for an informal opinion. Or whatever. Anybody have any questions? All right, let's get into it. The next page, this is one of the ones that's listed that you have to hear about. This is the next one. It's called anti-nepotism. I don't have this come up a whole lot, but I'm just looking at the first bullet point. I'm going to go through it, and then I'm going to try to give some examples. I'm not going to dwell a ton of time on it, but the key in this rule, is it hot or is it just me?
It's hot.
I'm sweating. Yeah. Who's in charge of this? Who's in charge of this role?
He's gone.
All right. Okay, because as painful as it is, this is where we got to start getting into the weeds and go through it, okay? So just, folks, just get newly born, don't start asking questions. It's not going to get any better. Your call. You guys can't appoint, employ, promote, or advance, advocate for the appointment, employment, promote of a relative. And when in doubt, anybody that has your last name as a relative, anyone has the last name of your spouse, if you have a question of whether it's a relative or not, then I'm going to ask you to contact your attorney. Now, there's this grandfathering provision. I had a situation where a city council member married a department head after they were, one was a department head, one was a city council member. You know, and that makes it that makes it really complicated. And again, a lot of times it's not. Remember now, a lot of times are any of the local governments here in Clark County that are here today have strong mayor forms of government? I don't think there are. Everybody has a council manager or commission manager form of government. Okay, so. Beg pardon?
Recognize
dictatorship.
Okay. Well, the reason she's the benevolent dictator.
Okay. Well, see, and that's generally speaking, these anti-nepotism prohibitions and this rule in Chapter 112, it's not going to catch you because most of these types of hiring and firing and promotion decisions are made by the bad lady or the bad guy. Now these rules apply to them, but this is for public officials. Chapter 112 does apply, but it doesn't. But anti-nepotism doesn't apply. Thank goodness, or you'd never be able to. Now that would be a disaster. But for the elected officials, you can't do it. Now is there anyone here that has a relative that's an employee in your city? Okay. Do you share Thanksgiving with them?
Well, actually, he's my husband, and
okay, that's a yes.
He is a city employee.
Okay.
He's not a department head.
That's okay. Okay, that's right. So you know this rule. See, this page in the outline. You want to have that right in front of you, and have it at dinner, whenever you have to sit down for dinner with your husband, and just say, remember, we can talk about work, but don't make me, because I can't do it. Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough. But there also has been, I've known of a public official that was already a public official at the time, and their spouse was hired as a department head. But, I mean, nothing was said about that.
Well, and again, I think the practical standpoint is that other than marine land, all of these employment decisions are going to be made either by county manager or a city manager or a department head who has been delegated the employment responsibilities. And the key is that for hiring or firing, you elected officials can't get involved. Now, I'm trying to think of other situations where it might become relevant. The other situation is remember, it only deals with a relative who's an employee. But let's say that as part of your job, you've read in the newspaper, because this happens, that someone was hired or someone was disciplined or someone quit or someone was fired, and you get some constituents that want to know what the heck is going on, and they want you to investigate it. Well, that's your job. Your job is to talk to the city or the county manager and find out about it. And the chances are, remember, this is only dealing with a relative. And so it's not going to be, you're going to have an opinion if it's your husband, okay? But let's say it's a niece or a nephew, someone that you know, your brother comes to you and says, look, Junior's having a hard time at your city. Is there something you can do? You know, he's up for a promotion. That's the situation. So you just, or it's about to be disciplined. I guess that fits better into the example that I was giving. Is there something you can do to help them out? And as tempting as that is, that's where you would probably, again, I'm just trying to think of factual situations where this would apply. That's where you're going to get caught up, something like that.
And that's, well, our board appoints other boards, like PAR board, subcommittees.
There you go.
So.
For purposes of what? For discipline? I mean,
no.
You're saying that's
advisory.
How
it's
your personnel policies
board.
Are enforced?
Mm-hmm.
Advisory
boards. Okay.
Advisory boards, mostly.
Okay.
Leisure Services is one of ours.
Okay. But
you appoint a relative, it's a non-paying, volunteer.
Doesn't apply.
Okay.
The law applies to, applies to paid and unpaid positions.
Right.
Paid and unpaid positions.
Right.
So, I have a question for Benita's situation.
Okay.
City manager brings forward a proposal for pay increases or an adjustment to their benefits. Can she vote on that?
Yes, she can, because that would be, I do not consider that to be a voting conflict of interest, because it would not be... inert, it would be such a quantity of the class, the size of the class would be such that it would not inert to her private gain as the statute applies. Now, I don't know how many employees Marineland has, but that might be a different situation. But
we officially have none. So
okay, so if you hire one person and it's your son, then you probably got a real problem there. And I'll defer to who's your city attorney?
Dennis Baird.
Okay, well, ask Dennis. But I'm going to put Dennis in the hot spot. Okay, let him try to answer that. All right, let's move on to the next one. By the way, just so you know that there is an end to this. You have to sit here and listen to me for not 2 hours, but 50 minutes each hour. So it's actually it's 100 minutes. So there is
provides
hope.
Not
that I'm counting.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty day out, and some of you already heard all this. You're just being realistic.
So 52 minutes is considered cruel and unusual.
That is correct. For everyone in the room, that's correct. All right. Okay, this one's a little more complicated. Doing business with one's agency. And it's two different things. First one, you guys can't, once you can't do something as an elected official, and the other one you can't do it as a private person. That's kind of the basic difference. And this is the one that gets a lot of people in trouble. So what you can't do as an elected official in your official capacity, I'm reading at the very top when you're doing business with one's agency. So as an elected official in your official capacity, you cannot directly or indirectly purchase, rent, lease, realty or goods or services for that agency from a business entity of which you or your relative, spouse or child, is an officer, partner, director, proprietor, or owner of a material interest. Now that's a lot of stuff, isn't it? This is what I'm talking about before. Good luck trying to parse through that. And that's one sentence, but that has got so many different moving parts to it that you really have to tip look. So I'm going to break it down, because every one of those is defined. And you'll see in here, I've told you where it's defined. And you're not purchasing agents, but a business entity, a material interest, more than 5%, what it means to be indirectly. So let's go through this. What I would be worried about, I'm going to try to make this as simple as possible, but I'm an elected official. I'm the city council person for the city of Palm Coast. And I've got a decision that comes before me on an agenda item where the city is going to make a decision to buy, rent, lease realty, buy goods or lease goods or services for the city of Palm Coast from a business entity, from a business of where I or my wife or my husband or my child is involved in that, has a material interest. And that would be the same as a conflict of interest, right? A voting conflict of interest. Okay? And that's why this rule applies to purchasing agents. And no one in this room that's an elected official is a purchasing agent. This it would come to you then in your capacity as an elected official in an agenda item. All right? So that would if something on an agenda comes up and when you vote on that agenda item to do one of these things, to buy, rent, whatever, and you've got a family member that's involved in that, you've got two things that you're worried about. One, a voting conflict of interest, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And the other is the violation, a separate and additional violation of doing business with one's own agency. Anyone have ever had that come up?
You said at the time of the agenda, it's going to be voted on. What if it's not voted on? So, like for our policy here at the city, if it's under a certain value, then it's just done directly by staff, and it's not voted on.
Well, then the second prohibition might kick in. That's my answer to that. So let's talk about that. I don't think you meant to do that, but that's good. Because in that situation, remember now, this is kind of the opposite. This is in the next paragraph, next bullet point. This is where a public officer acting in a private capacity, now you're put a different hat on. And when you're acting in a private capacity and you're renting, you're leasing, you're selling all of these things to the city of Palm Coast, then you were violating that rule. Jason, is that what you were asking?
Yeah, I think so.
See, so it's the flip. You can't do it if you're the one that's buying it from a private entity. The same is true if you've got a spouse or a child or a relative that's involved in your, you know, through you, or you're involved and you're trying to do business with the city of Palm Coast.
A little confused.
This one is confusing. So no doubt.
Let's say my son makes T-shirts.
Yep.
And one of the departments is going to go on a trip and they want T-shirts made for their business go away. And can they use my son's business or not? I'm on the city council. I have nothing to do with the purchase. I don't even know they're going to purchase shirts because they don't tell us anything. There's a difference there.
It's never going to get to you. Never going to vote on it.
Never going to vote on it. It's just they're buying T-shirts. You know what I mean? It's part of their budget.
Imagine a $30,000 signature.
Yeah,
exactly. And do that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so that's why I wouldn't come to the city council of the city of Palm Coast. And looking ahead in the agenda, there's express exemptions so that this rule would not apply. And with the city, I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm sure it's just basically the same. The city of Palm Coast has purchasing policies.
Right.
So if your son's graphic design company, T-shirt company, was a successful bidder, then they would have gone through this process. You would not have been involved.
Right.
You're not going to vote on it. And that to get the contract, now if it was over $30,000,
then it would come to
us. Come to you.
Different.
And you're going to need to abstain.
Right.
You're going to need to abstain.
Right.
Okay. And if it was your company,
yeah.
If it was your company, whether it was your company, not your son's company,
yeah.
but your company, and whether it was over or under $30,000, okay, that's doing business with one's agency.
Right.
All right. So let's say that the city of Palm Coast suddenly had the need to buy 1,000 guns.
Yes.
Okay.
I see that coming.
Okay. You do not want to submit a bid for that RFP.
Okay.
Sorry. You don't want to do that. Would be
unethical.
Well, let's do without 1,000 guns.
But let's go back to it's not the council member, not the elected official. It is their
one of their children,
right.
A son, a daughter. You're saying that we can go buy those 1,000 guns from the doctor?
If I didn't have any interest in
that. Let's do the t-shirts because.
Right.
So we go and buy 50 t-shirts.
That is correct.
The daughter gave us a quote, and we went out and got our required 2 other quotes. We had a total of 3.
You followed your purchasing policies.
Right. And the daughter came in low bid.
Right.
Okay.
Never, and because it's under $30,000.
Right.
Now, yeah, that's not doing, he's not doing business with okay. his own agency.
The fact that he approved the budget for that program.
Uh-huh. When he approved the budget, that authorized the purchase. Right. It did not authorize his daughter's successful response to the RFP.
All right. So we can do business with a family member.
Well, again, it's not an automatic. Everything else with this, as well as generally what I do for a living, it depends. You've got to look at the set of facts. If any of your cities have a situation where you've got a potential successful bidder that's you know related to an elected official, we need to take a look at that. But there are circumstances, in my opinion, where that would be authorized and would not violate Chapter 112. Anyone disagree? I'm not telling you. I've got, you know, these are. I'm doing my best to answer the questions here, but I mean, there's a lot of.
Another hypothetical. As a member of the city council, I'm a part-time employee, or part-time whatever. I have a part-time job driving a dump truck for a company that does dump trucking. The city goes out and needs a dump truck, and they hire ABC Trucking to provide a dump truck and driver for a day's work. And my employer says, John, get in the dump truck and go do whatever the city wants. All right? Not all right. I don't own any stock in the company. I'm an employee.
Okay. Why don't you go through that question again? I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask you to repeat the question.
I'm an employee. I have a part-time job right. driving a dump truck. The city has a pile of garbage. It needs to be moved. All their trucks are tied up. So the city manager or head of public works, somebody calls up ABC Trucking and says, I need a dump truck and a driver for a day. My boss at the dump truck company says, John, get the dump truck and go haul away the city's garbage.
Because your boss already has a contract.
No, it's just a
one-time.
Not standing, it's a one-time event.
Why would your boss, who is a private company, direct his employee to go out and do something for free for the city?
No.
Because it wouldn't happen unless there was an ongoing
thing to drive a dump truck.
I understand.
We went out and got 3 quotes at ABC Trucking Company.
Yeah, that's what I asked. Was there a contract between the?
Okay, there's a contractor. We went through our procurement
right.
process and hired ABC Trucking.
Right.
That the elected official is an employee of that company.
That's correct. Okay.
And the elected official, we're not writing a check to that elected official, but we're writing a check to a company, and then that elected official is getting a paycheck every other Friday.
In my opinion, that is, based upon my understanding of Chapter 112, that is not a violation of Chapter 112 under any of the specific rules. Now, there's a lot of circumstances where that could change, but that set of facts, you're just doing your job. You're not getting paid more or less.
Well,
it was obtained through proper procurement. You're not involved in the decision whether or not to do it.
His employment isn't contingent upon getting a job hauling for the city. He already has a job.
Right.
I would warn elected officials of public perception of seeing their elected official
absolutely
out there doing city work. And the perception is oh, they are making money off of it. Even though legally and ethically it's okay,
right.
the public perception sometimes
right.
will be a killer.
Just like for Governor the Sunshine. Mm-hmm. How many times have you all heard this? You go out after a meeting, and you go out for a snack or drinks, the elected officials, because you're friends.
and you go to a local restaurant and you're not talking about, I know you're not talking about city business, but as Mr. Landon says, I bet you half the people that are in that restaurant with you are thinking that you're talking about city business, and
we're really talking about Deflategate.
But I'm beating a dead horse. I get that, but I mean, Mr. Landon's point is well taken. I mean, remember that quote that I gave at the very beginning that, you know, it could be a small technical or it could be unintentional, it could be innocent, but the consequences could be severe because the charges are made, and then. You know the old expression, the charges on page 1 and the retractions on page 12. Let's go through the exceptions. It's hard to know whether any of these could potentially ever apply to anyone that's sitting in this room, so I'm just going to go over them real quickly. These are all in chapter 112. You know, if advisory board members, and a lot of this isn't going to apply to a bigger city, but to a smaller city like Bunnell, or Flagler Beach. There's situations where you could have an employee who's a relative. You could have a situation where you have a business that is one of the main businesses in a certain area, such that it's just tempting not to provide those services or those goods to your local government. City of Palm Coast, my city, probably less so. But there could be some smaller towns where these issues could crop up on a much more regular basis. And so these would be something you'd want to keep an eye out for. So if the business that the public officials involved in is transacted by a rotation among all qualified suppliers, people that responded to RFQs or RFP. So that official's business can be placed on a rotation list. And then we go back to the purpose. The purpose is to, you keep going back to the Florida Constitution and those rules, and that is that you're trying to protect the public's confidence in our public system. That's one of the main purposes of Chapter 112. So, as Mr. Landon said, it's not more substance, but it's also appearance as well. When the business is transacted through a sealed competitive bidding process, the official's business may submit a bid and may be awarded the contract. And then there are some requirements that you have to go through that. Emergency purchases are exempted. When the official, kind of what I was talking about before, if you're a small enough town, if the business is that if your public official has an interest in, is the only source of supply within the public subdivision, then an exemption is provided and you've got to fill out a form. Small amounts, there's exceptions for that. There's a lot more to that, but I wanted to, that's the ones that I think are the ones that can come out and bite you the most. So let's move on, because I do want to get to I want to get to voting conflicts. Okay, the next one. Conflicting employment and contractual relationships. And honestly, this one's sometimes it's hard to distinguish this from the one that we just covered. Okay, this statute, this portion of Chapter 112 precludes public officials from having an employment or contractual relationship with a business entity that's doing business with the agency, or having employment or contractual relationships that create a continuing or frequently reoccurring conflict. And I think that latter one is one that you have to be aware of. And that conflict would be between your private interests as a business person and your performance of your public duties. It's obviously very much an issue in small communities. What it does, it forces you as a public official to choose between continuing in office or continuing employment or the contractual relationships. And this is the one that comes up quite frequently if you look at Commission on Ethics. It has to be a current, present conflict, not a potential, not a past, not a future. Is there anyone that here has a question about this particular rule, given that it's so close to what we were just talking about? I'm trying to think of some situations that have come up. I will tell you that if most sets of facts that deal with doing business with one's agency, a lot of times can provide count two brought from the Commission on Ethics for a violation of this rule as well, because they're so similarly situated. All right. I want to point your attention to some exemptions. And there are five of them. I'm not going to go through them. Move on to misuse of public position prohibition. This one, I will tell you, is one of the bad ones. This is the one where if you get caught, then the Commission on Ethics is going to penalize you. They're going to do something severe, because this one involves intent or bad motive. This is where the issue of corruption, wrongful intent, this is the actual definition in the statute. This is where an action is done with a wrongful intent and for the purpose of obtaining or compensating or receiving compensation for any benefit resulting from some act or omission of a public servant which is inconsistent with the proper performance of his or her duties. I'll give you some examples. Hang on just a second. Have any of you ever heard of the federal law that talks about honest services fraud? Anybody heard about that? Okay, that's a federal law. And if you violate, remember I told you that there's civil penalties for violating Chapter 112, but there's two statutes where the state authority, state attorney can get involved. If you're doing something under misuse of public position prohibition, where you're intentionally using your position to benefit yourself at the cost of the public, you're intentionally doing it, and there's a decent chance that you could get prosecuted by the federal government. And that's federal prosecutors, what is called an honest services fraud. And if all of you, you know, keep up with statewide publications, you read about some situations where this was involved in Southeast Florida, down in the Miami area, in the Fort Lauderdale area, where some people went to jail or were indicted for violation of, and that's where they were using their public, basically it was bribery. You know, they get caught with their hand in the till, and there was kickbacks and things like that. And that's from another, or what we think was from another generation, was, you know, from a past, but it still goes on in some parts of the country, in some parts of the state of Florida. All right, here's an example. I wanted to give you an example. Circuit court clerk. I don't have any circuit court clerks in here, do I? I'm picking on them? Okay. Prevented a person from purchasing property at a foreclosure sale in order to acquire the property for his son. It's pretty obvious, right? You kind of think, oh, I can get away with that. Right? Well, that person didn't. County commissioner who used county equipment and personnel to repair a road on his farm. These are real. These are real.
That's happened here.
Okay. All right. All right. The fact that all of you are aghast at these examples is a good sign. Because, I mean, to me, when I was reading this and preparing for this, I'm going, what were those people thinking? You know, how could they not think that they were, number one, they weren't going to get caught, Number two, that if they got caught, of course, if you're thinking of, if you're thinking, what happened, I wonder if I'm going to get caught. If you're thinking that, it's wrong. Okay? Some more. A county commissioner, this is just, I'm just, well, it's kind of fun because I'm just going to read the county ones. County commissioner threatened to fire a county employee if the employee's wife did not withdraw as a candidate for the school board against the county commissioner's friend. Okay, so, you know, you have to marvel. You have to marvel at the audacity that an elected official, but those are the situations where, you know, there's all sorts of things. That's most likely three things. One, you're going to get terminated or suspended at the very least. State attorney is going to be contacting you, and the federal prosecutor is going to be contacting you for all those. So I would hope that those are pretty self-evident. This one's a little less obvious, but you know, it's the next one. It's prohibition against disclosure or use of certain information. This is the one that you always think about. Okay, if you're involved in the finance industry and you get some information that you could use in the stock market or the bond market and make a little bit of money. Well, let's not kid ourselves. There's information that all of you acquire as government officials that can be used potentially for your own benefit. It's kind of like insider information. And just so you know, there is a rule of Chapter 112 that says that if you use that for your own personal gain, that's a violation of Chapter 112. And again, I had... this information cannot be used for your gain or any other person or business entity. So even if you're trying to do someone a favor, let's think about it. That makes sense because even if you're not personally benefiting, by doing that, you're hurting the public. So you always have to keep this is my recommendation. When someone, and you probably wouldn't even do this on your own, someone would come to you and bring a suggestion to you, or they'd hear you some conversation in a public meeting and say, let's talk about that. And you know, it's an old friend from college or a fraternity or sorority brother or sister, and it's just so tempting to give some information. And that person goes out and uses that information, and somehow it makes the newspaper or the opposition, the competitor, whoever was involved in that process, finds out about it. It's going to come back and haunt the public official who was just trying to be a nice guy or a nice lady with an old fraternity or sorority buddy. So it's that kind of information that you have to be careful about.
A question.
Yes, ma'am.
We've always been told when we had to recuse ourselves from an issue, we were allowed to speak about the issue.
Yes, you
just
can.
Just not... vote on the issue.
That is correct.
So you're saying it's okay.
Yeah, that's a voting issue. We're going to get to that. But okay. That's true. That is, and it's a very good question. We'll go ahead and deal with it now. If you have a voting conflict of interest and you're an elected official as opposed to an appointee, you're an elected official and you've determined that you have a voting conflict of interest, while you can't vote on it, then you've got to declare the conflict and fill out the form within 15 days and you go to your city clerk. You can participate in the discussion. All right? So that the advice that you got was correct. Okay? Any questions about that? Good. All right. Gifts. All right. This one's a big one. Got really the two big ones, voting conflict and gifts now. I'm going to make a distinction. You are not to go out and solicit a gift. There's a difference. We kind of talked about at the beginning about how someone comes to you and says, or offers you something, or says, come on, we've got a Boy Scout dinner. We'd love to have you there. That's different than if you go out to a business person and say, boy, I really would you know, I've been really, I know you got season tickets. I've been just dying to go see those Jaguars. You know, let's just say for
that the unlikely happens and they've got a winning season. Let's just say
that. You're really going out.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, there just aren't any tickets left. So this is a very unusual example. Okay, winning season and there's not any tickets available. So you go to someone that you know has season tickets, and you say, "Boy, I sure would." And they, and you know, and they're a contractor, or they've got someone that has contracts with the city of fill in the blank. And they said, "Here, no problem. Here's my tickets." That isn't, you know, there's no form that you can fill out. There's no form that your city or county clerk can give you that will excuse you from doing that. There's no form that will protect you from a complaint that's filed with the Commission on Ethics. That is a soliciting a gift in your official capacity is a violation. I want to make that distinction. I think that's an important distinction, and I would think an obvious one, between soliciting and then someone coming to you. And it's subtle sometimes, but I'm trying to overemphasize the point. You know, sometimes it's a fine line between soliciting a gift and accepting. But one's crystal clear: don't do it. The other, my opinion, don't do. But you can. That's accepting a gift under certain conditions. Yes, sir.
An elected official is an incumbent, and he's deciding to run. She's deciding to run for re-election. And is holding a campaign dinner and talks to you, Mr. Reichman, and said, "I've got a campaign dinner and the tickets are $500.
There are separate rules regarding solicitations for campaign contributions. And that is not within the scope of my discussion, and that is not within the scope of the purpose of this.
But that's a subtle distinction, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are the rules, and I'm doing this not being fully prepared, but I mean, there are certain reporting requirements and limits on contributions and things like that that would apply to that request, as opposed to a request for a gift unrelated to your election.
Okay. I'm turned out, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, good. You're making me sweat up here a little bit. Okay.
Bill, what about acceptance of a gift from an elected official that's of a different governing body? Let's say, for instance, that a member of the county commission called me up and said, "Bill, I'd like to take you out to dinner."
Isn't that kind of in the same category of the Jaguars having a winning season?
Come on,
we've got to have a little fun here. This is horrible.
But let's say it happened.
Well, is there an expectation of something?
Well, no. There always is an expectation. Okay. Remember the point I was trying to make, Mayor. I think there's always. I think it goes back to the issue of how much. And from whom? And I don't think that you would consider that person to be a lobbyist. So that I don't think that would be a factor. Whether you have to report it or not is. I mean, I think you obviously could accept it, but you're gonna. The issue is depending upon the quantity of it, because that's not where you're being. If that's not for the benefit of the city of Palm Coast, that's where someone else is taking you as an individual in your official capacity and buying something for you which has value.
Okay, so I'm still not sure what your answer is.
The answer is yes, and you probably want to get with Virginia and fill it up and make sure that you keep a running track of your...
Is the point, though, that it's not about the other person being the county commissioner, it's just a person...
That's correct. The distinction, there's really three groups of people under the rule regarding... gifts. One, lobbyists. Two, family. No, yes, and then everyone else. And I'm oversimplifying. Does that make sense? Those are the three groups. I guess, and again, we're running out of time, so I don't have an opportunity to make all...
Lobbyist is your lobbyist?
I'm still a lobbyist.
Okay.
Because the definition of a lobbyist is...
So I go to Tallahassee and I meet our lobbyist and he's going to buy us dinner or...
Should be more than $100. It's less than $100.
I've seen what they eat.
I thought you said you couldn't have anything from the lobbyist.
I'm saying that anything over... Fair enough. I was trying to oversimplify. Okay? You know, if someone comes to you and you know that they're basically fall within the definition of lobbyists, whenever possible, just say no thank you, okay? Because it just creates a potential problem down the road. But the straight and narrow is that if it's more than $100, it's absolutely illegal from a lobbyist, okay? You can take anything you want from a relative, and everyone else, there's not a monetary limit, but there's a reporting requirement. You got to report anything.
The underlying purpose is to prevent that lobbyist from buying special interest. But if it's your own lobbyist, you're already paying him $20,000 a year.
But the definition of lobbyist is broad enough. I mean, it's really a lobbyist is someone that a lobbyist that you hire could potentially be a lobbyist for your city, meaning coming to your city, in addition to working for your city. Now, there's also a situation, again, you have to take a hard look at what that person is being, or it's a company or a person you're hiring them to do. My guess is that most of the time when you're taken to, let's look at the definition of lobbyist, okay? Let's look at it. All right. This is in the materials. It's see where it says get prohibitions and disclosures for reporting individuals and procurement employees. This is the third page of that. A lobbyist is defined to mean any natural person who is compensated for seeking to influence the government decision making. Your RIPEs, those are reporting individuals or procurement officers. That's what a RIPE is, or the agency of a RIPE. Or for seeking to encourage the passage, defeat, or modification of any recommendation or proposal by you or your agency. So, under the facts you just gave, man, probably that person, that lobbyist, which is basically the contractor, is not a lobbyist as to Flagler County. Fair enough? Is that are you like that answer better?
Yep.
Okay, good. So I just want to make sure that you're aware that this is the process that you have to go through.
Because when you define lobbyists,
right,
it's a lobbyist who's come over.
Right.
Not yours.
Exactly. Okay. Just some general rules. This one deals with family again, so your public official, your spouses, your minor children, but not other relatives, cannot accept, I'm not talking about solicit, cannot accept basically anything of value when you suspect, and basically this means always, that it's given to influence a vote. Here's some examples where a person was found guilty of violating this. A lobbyist paid trip to Key West, okay, fairly obvious. Free cable television service from the city's cable. Now I'm picking county folks. I'm picking on the city. City officials receiving free memberships from a country club, leasing its facilities from the city. Even one employee received $100 in participation in a brief survey regarding a company doing business with a department. Because let's face it, I mean, $100 is not. That's not fair value. So are there any situations where, I'd like to get some folks, are there situations other than what we talked about before where someone has tried to give you a gift in your official capacity as a public official?
There's nobody going to say nothing.
Hey, I was happy if I got a donation from my campaign.
Okay. And assuming that means that no one has, let's make that assumption. I think part of that is because there is greater awareness about this. It's greater awareness, and it's not just because of your greater awareness, but it's a greater awareness on the people that would be in the business of giving you gifts. They just understand that that's something that you can't do more. And so that's good. So, I mean, that actually is a good thing.
Can I say something?
Please.
Usually the terminology that comes along with somebody that's looking to have you bought off, if you will, is what would it take? I'm sure most of us heard that in this room. What would it take for this to happen?
You don't have enough.
Yeah, you don't have enough.
I've told you that the statutory definition of gift is just so broad that it basically covers anything of value. Use of things, gave you an example, use of land, forgiveness of a debt. I'm trying to give you some examples, folks. Food and beverage, entrance fees, personal services, mow your lawn, whatever. And then the definition says, any other similar service or thing having an attributable value not already provided for in the section. I want to read this. You should always look behind a gift as to who is the donor and ask yourself the reason why such a gift is being given to you. Can you accept it? Do you want to accept it? Mr. Landon's point, what is the public perception if you accept it? If it doesn't feel right, don't accept it.
So if I'm looking to buy a piece of property, let's say, and somebody we contract or may contract with has the property, and I buy the property from them, and let's say, I don't know, right now property values are down, so I get it for a good price. Could that be perceived as a...
You would want to make sure to protect yourself that there is some factual support for the price that you pay.
Okay.
If you bought a piece of property and the appraisal was $100,000 and you got it for $50,000, I'd be worried.
Okay.
Now I'm not telling you that there's a bright light, an absolute.
Yeah.
Exact. But if you're looking,
but I should have something behind me to show why it was worth $50,000.
Yeah, because if you're thinking someone complains, someone says that. I think that also in that situation, if there was a discrepancy between fair market value and the amount that you paid for it, it wouldn't be just this one part of Chapter 112, but it could be misuse of office, and it could be one of the other ones that could come into play, which catches the attention more directly and more quickly with the Commission on Ethics and maybe some other folks as well.
Now,
other folks that you don't want to be contacted by.
Yes, on the line of complaint, somebody calls and says, "Steve offered me a bribe," or "Steve asked me for money to see something."
Solicited a gift.
Yeah,
which is a bribe.
They're gonna investigate that, I'm assuming.
Commission on Ethics.
What if they have nothing to show? I mean, where I'm speaking from is not how to get away with it, somebody just calls and says, well, I'm going to give him a hard time.
You know, do it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. I've seen that.
It happens.
And there's a couple of people out there who don't like me.
I know it's not.
Here
they
are.
Yeah, did you go through the shelter that you
came from? The other thing, Steve, the next phone call will be in the media to report to them that there was a...
wrongdoing.
The ethics commission has a complaint saying, and so supposedly it is sealed until a certain...
Final result. Correct.
On keeping it that way.
Yeah, good luck.
A lot of people find out.
Okay.
And then when the media puts it on the front page that the complaint has been filed, in most people's minds, you're already guilty.
Guilty, yeah.
So welcome to the business.
Okay. But I don't care about that too much. I do, but not as much as my personal... Am I going to be under... How much is this going to cost me now just because somebody said...
That's what we've been talking about during the course of this meeting, and some of you may or may not have had to deal with this discussion.
Let's just Steve's specific point.
Yeah, I mean, everything's...
Somebody calls Commission of Ethics and say, Mr. Mobile did X, Y, and Z. Never heard about it, never saw it. Who defends him?
And at whose expense?
Well, what you're going to, the complaint, first of all, the commission acts, well, we'll make an inquiry. You're going to receive a letter. At that point in time, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to bring it to the attention of the city manager and the city council. And you're going to want to discuss it with them. And obviously, you're going to tell them what's going on. You're probably going to want to have a discussion with the city manager so there can be a decision made about who's going to provide the defense. Mm-hmm. That's the threshold issue. And as I said before in our discussion, unless it appears right out of the gate that there's a problem as far as guilt or innocence,
yeah,
then my experience is that city councils, city commissions provide a defense to
the elected officials. The county, the city, the village could provide the legal defense.
They can.
Okay.
That's correct. They absolutely can.
I'll go with a staff member. My position would be that when we look into it and there doesn't appear to be grounds, based on what we've seen, we would find an offense. If we look into it and...
Oh, my God, is he filthy dirty?
Yes. Then it's like, good
you're
luck.
On your own.
You're on your own. So I think it's, circumstances, but if because people file complaints fairly regularly that are not founded or they're based on false information, it's almost... at least my opinion makes a lot of sense that the organization is going to defend that because it's all part of doing this crazy business.
Yeah. If you're in your official capacity, I think that.
Yeah, it has to
official
be.
Capacity versus non-official.
Well, correct.
Sure. If it's
not whether it's groundless or not groundless, it's whether you act in official capacity or not.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I don't think you can make that judgment.
Look under the outline because there is some. Again, y'all can read it, but I just want to make sure that you understand it's in there. Complaints have to be made under oath. There's a certain form. Copies going to be sent to the commission, from the commission to the respondent, as I mentioned. They're confidential, as Mr. Landon said, unless confidential is waived up to the point where the complaint. When I say confidential, I mean to the extent that anything in this world that we work in and live in is confidential. Then on the next page, you'll see, and this goes to your question, I think it was the mayor, you asked this question about who's paying for it, and the defense qualifies under common law. This is where the council can justify, as opposed to not spending public money for private, which would be ultra-virus. Common law qualifies it, the defense for reimbursement by the official's agency of the attorney's fees. Then, as I said before, fees may not be awarded when the complaint arises out of a vote by the public official that directly advances the official's private pecuniary interest. So, if there was that determination. And I wanted to add this in there. There's also an opportunity, good luck, where you can try to get repayment from a person who's bringing a complaint. But like anything else, I mean, there's turnips and then there's blood and there's stones and there's all that kind of good stuff. But sometimes you never know.
I think there's one most common type of guilt I'm offered, and that is for work done on my own house. I need my roof repaired. So I call a contractor to come repair my roof.
Right.
And on the invoice it says $700, discount $500. It's happened to me recently.
Really?
Yes, and so then I call and say, what's the discount? Well, the boss man said that, give you a discount.
And get that fixed ASAP.
And I say, yeah, that's a front page story.
Right.
And you
cannot.
You need to send me a new
invoice. As tempting as that is. You can't,
for the full amount.
Right. That's an easy one.
Or the other one is I never get the invoice. And no word said, just they do the work at my house, and I never get an invoice. But then they tell all their friends, I did some free work for the city manager. And it's a killer when, nothing that has been said, etc. And sometimes it's because they think that's the way I'm supposed to do business. And in order for me to stay in business in Palm Coast, I've got to, because of public perception. So for all elected officials and department heads, et cetera, when you have someone work at your home, it's also important to make sure that you pay them a fair amount, or else it could be if not legally, at least perception-wise,
right,
a gift.
Well, the last thing you're going to want to have is hanging out there an invoice where it says $700 for a $500 discount. You know, you're going to want to send it. You're going to want to have an email saying, this is to confirm that I had a phone conversation with you today where I specifically directed you to send me a replacement. I mean, folks, you can't be too careful.
On the other hand, if the ad in the newspaper says, you know, January discount 10% off, and they're giving it to everybody.
But that's for everybody. Yeah. Right. That's not a gift.
Not a problem.
Right.
But it's the same thing as, you know, buying property from somebody that you might be involved with city business is fine, as long as it is
fair price.
Obviously, makes sense as to what the transition
is all about. Let me suggest that, because we're almost out of time, but I wanted to deal with voting conflicts, because we haven't talked about that a little bit. But doesn't a lot of this just kind of common sense? I mean, I can stand up here. No? Okay. I mean, but I can stand up here for 4 hours, but the bottom line is a lot of this is just common sense. No? Okay. People don't agree. All right, voting conflicts. This is the one that's real common. You can't vote. You can talk about it as an elected official, but you can't vote when the measure that you want to vote on, and you go through the so they would talk about the words that are in the rule. Benefits, they call it inure to your elected officials. Special private gain or loss. When you know that it would inure to your gain or loss, where it's a loss of a principal that you're retained as the parent organization, subsidiary of a corporate, or of a relative or a business associate. So there's a long list of people that you cannot vote on. It's not just you. People always think, well, you know, I own this, or I. It's not just you. It's a big group of people out there that. And quite candidly, I've had the question more. I think it was someone asked about it. It's not you, but it's your employer. That, you know, the person you work for. That's where it's gonna. That's where it's gonna come up more. And it was also mentioned that. There's two basic rules that determine whether or not a conflict exists. A conflict of interest for voting purposes exists, and as you, I think, but, ma'am, you mentioned it was the size of the class, and they use the 1% rule, and we'll get to talk about that in a second. And the other is
that they don't view it that way when it comes to business associates. Trust me on that.
I understand. Yeah, I'm telling you what the rule is, and then I've been trying to share with you my practical advice on. Don't go to the edge. Go
to that edge.
Stay.
The leading edge.
Yeah. Don't be the one first up the hill. You know, you don't even want to be close, because as we've said over and over again, and what Mr. Landon was saying, you know, front page, back page. You know, it's just not worth it. You're going to lose if this thing comes up. You're going to lose. So just don't give them the opportunity. And the other one is the remote and speculative test. So let me talk about a little bit about what those means. Let me give you some examples. That's the best way to do it. Let's say that you're voting on, have a situation where you're voting on allowing a large chunk of land to be developed as a big recreational, private recreational facility, and you have a one-third interest in a business that is across the street from this big chunk of land that depending upon your vote, could develop. As what used to be a rundown shopping center, and now it's going to be rebuilt as a big sporting facility. Is that a conflict of interest? Because you own a one-third share in a building that's across the street. You would want to look at that really, really close for the two tests. Number one, the size of the class. In other words, is that going to be to your special private gain? Well, you'd have to look at first of all, how big is the? I mean, if you're the only property owner that could be affected, then that you may trigger that part of the test. But let's say that there is going to be an impact. That you make a determination. You can do this from a standpoint of hire an expert to determine how that's going to affect property values of your property that's across the street. But if that expert says or that realtor says, well, this is going to have a positive effect on everybody within. A half a mile, well, then you're looking up 200, 300, 400 property owners. Okay, so you may be able to argue, well, it was not a special private gain because the size of the class.
was large enough that it did not trigger a voting conflict of interest. Now, the other, applying that set of facts to the other test is the remoteness or speculative test. And this actually happened in the factual situation I just gave you. And that was is that the vote to rezone it did not guarantee, according to the information that we acquired from the Commission on Ethics, did not guarantee that it was ever going to be built, didn't ever guarantee that that one-third interest in that property would ever be increased to you or to your family member. So the determination was made that, rightly or wrongly, that's the word we got, that the benefit, the gain, was too remote or speculative. Now, I can tell you that it has been my experience that under that set of circumstances, a lot of my clients, even though we go through that analysis and we conclude that there is a high probability that that would not be deemed by the Commission on Ethics as a voting conflict, that person still chooses to declare a conflict of interest and not vote, participate but not vote, because the appearance of voting on that is just people in the real world are not going to realize that whether it's a conflict of interest or not is based upon the size of the class and the remote and speculative test. They don't have a clue about that. They're just going to think, well, you know, she voted yes because they're going to make a ton of money. They're going to sell in a couple of years and make a ton of money. So
the other issue on that is everybody always thinks that it's a gain, but if it's a loss, it's equal.
Oh, it can either way, yeah.
People don't think of it.
And that's a real good point, because the rule says gain or loss, your special pecuniary gain or loss, because I mean, we're all worried, we're just as worried about losing money as we are about making money.
And I'll give everybody another quick example here of the ruling I just got from them verbally. Actually, they put it in an email. But we have this upcoming rental ordinance, and I unknowingly remodeled a house for somebody who does weekly rentals. And so we're going to be voting on that. And if we were to enact the ordinance the way it stood, this person will be harmed by it. So I called the commission and said, I had a business relationship with someone. It's over. It's done. But this is coming up. And they said the class was too big.
Yeah, I would not have. That would... Let me tell you, you all know the process if you're worried. My suggestion is, and this is if you have any questions, I'll ask, but if you hand back your neck test, if you're worried about it, what you want to do is as soon as you think about it, you get your agenda for a workshop or a business meeting, you see something on there, and you prepare and you look through it, you're going to want to contact get as much information about the agenda item as possible, and then contact your city or your county attorney and have a discussion with the city or county attorney so that attorney can do some research for commission on ethics opinions, and if necessary, which is the example that I gave, give yourself enough time that you can call the commission on ethics or write to them and get an opinion in advance. Because remember now, the law is very clear. Unless you have a conflict of interest, you have to vote. You're required under Chapter 166 in the Florida statutes to vote on anything that you don't have a conflict of interest. So, you know, you're caught. You're going to have to support your decision to vote or not to vote one way or the other. So you can't just wait till the meeting and say, well, I'm not going to vote just out of an abundance of caution. Yes, ma'am.
I just wish it was titled a little different, because conflict of interest in this statute is purely cash. The public doesn't see it that way. They think, like, I volunteer a lot, so I have a lot of volunteer things that I do. So am I in conflict? And a lot of people think, well...
We're not talking about voting now, are we?
Yeah, well, not just so much. Yes, voting. If the vote on what you're taking does not have a financial, it's only financial. So I could vote to... let the park be called, or let whatever the development is, be taken out, be developed, and it's across from my business. You just use one. Well, I'm an employee at that business. I don't have any financial, but it is in my interest to have a nice beautification project across the street. But there's perceived that because I work there, I have an interest in it. But it would only affect me if it's a financial interest, which does not affect me, because I don't own the place.
I understand that, but that's the rule.
I know that.
But is a building a public park? Doesn't that create a very large class?
Yes, it does.
The park can be...
But her point's a little bit different, and that is that there's monetary versus non-monetary.
Correct.
But, I mean, unless I'm very mistaken, the rule applies to pecuniary gains or losses.
That is correct. Right. But it says
whether it makes you feel better or not.
Conflict of interest in the name of it. Conflict of interest.
Right, voting conflicts of interest.
It spins the public. Because I get a lot of calls. Isn't that a conflict of interest? And I always say, no, it has to be financial.
And you're right.
Because it then turns into... You can't have an ideology.
Correct.
And vote. So you can't legislate that.
Remember, this thing all starts with the concept of the worst is bribery, quid pro quo. You're taking money because you're an elected official. And then, you know, that's the extreme. That's obviously wrong. We gave you a bunch of silly examples. All of you know that's wrong. But then there's all these other situations where it's not so obvious. What is the common theme? It all involves benefit. Financial benefit to you, to your spouse, to your family, to a business associate. If you're thinking it's affecting me, I'm making some money, or I'm going to benefit somehow from a pecuniary standpoint, and it's not just me, but gifts, everything. That's the common theme. That's the common sense. That's the hair on the back of your neck.
The gain has to be reasonably certain. It can't be speculative gain.
From a voting conflict, correct. Correct.
Yeah. If I build the park here, my business might get better.
Yeah,
that's very speculative, I would think.
Well, and what you have to do is you have to not just guess. You have to try to do your best. You work through it with the commissioner of ethics or with your city attorney, and you take a look at what is my business. If there's a big city park that's going in right, and you sell and rent bikes, well, that might be different than if you sell fire equipment or something like that. So again, these voting conflicts of interest questions are extremely factual oriented. That's why there's a zillion decisions from the Commission on Ethics, because one set of facts, clear violation, another set of facts, close, and the other one not a violation at all. Yes, sir.
I hope I know how to ask this question. I was a happy elected official before I came to this place, incidentally.
Good. Now I've done my job.
What I want to ask a question about is, you illustrated a little while ago about the obvious, the not so obvious.
Yes, sir.
What I'm concerned about, I'm sure most of the people here are concerned about, is not so obvious.
Right.
Supposing I do something and don't realize that there's any ethics violation there until someone reports me and the ethics committee contacts me.
Yes.
Is intent any part of the litigation in that process?
Yes, it depends on what they're going to charge you with. Some things you don't have to have any intent. You still could be found in violation. But as I mentioned to you before, if you're intending to take money because of your public position, that's the opposite. That's where it's not just going to be slap on the wrist and a suspension by the governor or something like that. That's where you have state attorneys involved and federal prosecutors. Where you're getting money, where you solicit a bribe, where you solicit a gift, where you make money because you're doing business, you have a company that does business with your, with your government authority, and you're making money off that. That's what you have to stay away from.
Bill, that's intent.
But ignorance is not.
It's not a defense. It just means the penalty is going to likely be less.
If you just didn't know that was against the law.
Oh, I realize ignorance is no excuse. But what I'm saying is, litigation process, if I had no intention of doing anything wrong and didn't realize I did anything wrong, is that taken into consideration in the commission's litigation process?
But, everyone, as they say, there's no guilty people, admittedly guilty people, in jail. So, they're going to... The prosecutors or the commission ethics, they're going to say, not what's necessarily where you knew. Should you have known?
The whole reason.
And that's why we're doing it. Exactly. That's because so. And then
I raised the bar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Bar.
For potentially frivolous filings, does the statute give amnesty to the filer from libel or slander?
Not that I'm aware of. There may be a higher bar. because you're a public official. Remember, there's a different standard for defamation for defaming a private person versus a public official. Remember the movie Absence of Malice? Not a great movie, but a good example. I mean, when you're going after a newspaper or a public official and it's false, that public official is not going to win for defamation. You have to have damages too, just because it's false. You have to show intent, that there was an intent to defame and intent to damage. And you know what? And that's you might be able to prove that in some situations. You might be able to prove that. Yeah. Well, you've done your time. You're free.
Oh, no, pardon.
Okay. Virginia, if you need
to sign out, you're welcome to come back.